I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
John McLean. John, I put it to you, John McLean. Would you, as one of the most venerable voices in sports media and in the world of sports in general, like to be a figurehead where we'll award you stock, but you don't have to make any investment yourself? We'll give you 5%. Would you like to be part of our potential ownership group of not an XFL team, mind you, but the entire XFL,
all the teams?
Of course I would, if it would massage my ego, which is why these people get in this, because they know it's a money losing proposition. Vince McMahon guaranteed everybody he would be in business for 2 years. Nobody could foresee the coronavirus, of course, and I would imagine one of the reasons he did what he did was he was taking a beating on WWE. So I wish somebody would step up there, because they were doing everything they were supposed to do, and I think they would have made changes in the second year, and I think the model looked good, and that's why so many people are checking it out. But it is a money-losing proposition, but it's a good tax write-off.
Yeah, well, at least initially, nobody's made it far enough to know if you can actually be profitable doing it, and they had pretty good TV deals too, John. It sounds like it exceeded your expectations.
It did, especially maybe it was because we had the Roughnecks and they were the only unbeaten team and they were the most exciting team with P.J. Walker and Coach June Jones, and they were like the model franchise, and they drew like 19,000 every game at U of H, and it was a great venue. We went to what turned out their last home game, only the second time I've been in the stands at a pro football game in like 50 years. And we had a blast, and I think they probably would have hosted the championship game. They probably would have won the championship, and that would have gotten people more fired up for the second season.
Yeah, it would have been fun. It's too bad. John McLean joining us for his weekly visit. He's brought to you by HornSolutions.net. John, I guess first and foremost, we don't get to see you in person. How you doing these days?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you guys asking. We're trying to do everything we're supposed to do, following guidelines. We've done that. Walking a lot, not losing any weight because my wife is a great cook, cooks way too much, and reading a whole lot of books. So, and I'm writing every day and doing all my weekly shows and a lot around the league. So I'm staying busy. The only thing is I don't have to fight the gallery of traffic coming to 610 of the Texans.
John, were you shocked or pleasantly surprised perhaps that the NFL thinks that the mini camps might be up and in action by the end of June?
Well, I don't think for a minute they will, but because everything they've tried to put out there, they put a happy face on everything. And just like you do in baseball and basketball, you know, the union leadership, J.C. Trotter came out and said, no, that's not going to happen. We've already got dates agreed on in the CBA, if indeed we have the mini camps. And, you know, if they do, I can't wait to see when they get back. You know, how is it? You guys were talking about Booger McFarland. I read a thing by Booger on The Athletic talking about this football, as a former football player, how in the world you could expect people to social distance in the stands, at home, in public, and yet football players cannot social distance. In no sport do they get closer than they do in football and get, you know, bleed on each other and slobber knockers and spit on each other and all those things that you're supposed to stay away from. So I wish they would, so we could see what kind of guidelines they'll have. The people at the organization, at the Texans right now. First thing they have to do is figure out how they're going to be able to do their job under the current restrictions of which they are following. And then when the players and coaches eventually get back, there's all this speculation, could, may, might. And the truth is nobody knows for sure right now.
So, John, you don't think there will be mini camp in June?
I'd be stunned if there were. And if there were, we won't see it. Because I think I don't know if it'll be leagues or teams. And you notice when the Astros put out their release about, I read all of them about coming back here at Minute Maid and going to the West Palm Beach. One of the things, no public or media invited. And I think that, you know, the media won't be around anytime soon. And I hope that some of these leagues and teams don't use it as an opportunity. Well, let's keep them away, and we'll use our in-house communications department to put out the information we wanted. That would be vastly unfair, but that's what I'm eagerly anticipating, is to see how they handle the media. I've had two NFL media relations departments call me and ask me for my ideas. They're calling other people, been around a while, about what do they think as they formulate their policy. I don't know if it'll be league-wide or if it'll be up to each individual team. You guys know you've been in the big auditorium at the stadium. That would be fine for media social distancing. And then up on the stage at the podium, Bill O'Brien and Sean Watson and J.J. Watt are not even anywhere close to us. But on the other hand, they might not want us in a room where they come that they use every day, even though they're going to clean it like crazy. So, and I'm certainly not expecting to be in the locker room anytime soon.
Yeah, do we have any word yet on that hygiene expert that the NFL, that the Houston Texans were looking to hire?
Well, I think every team's got them, and they're all using them. And and the Texans, another thing, they don't own the stadium. They don't control the stadium. You know, they share the stadium, so they've got to have, you know, whatever they do over there has got to be done for everybody that utilizes the stadium. And I don't know when they'll have their next event, but people are over there working. More are going to come back, and they've got to. I don't know what they've put up, like partitions at their cubicles. I know the Texans are running out of space the way it was before the coronavirus, because the organization just continued to grow, and it was like they were shrinking the space they could use. And that was before having to be socially distant.
John, how would you rate the importance of as normal a preseason as possible, as normal a training camp as possible for the Texans, you know, just on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most important, how would you rate the importance of it for them, given the fact that they've got new pieces on offense and two new play callers?
I think it's the same since the play callers have been there, and they know everybody, and they know the systems, and it's not going to be as hard for them as it would be, say, Matt Rhule. He has two new NFL play callers, not just new play callers, but NFL play callers, and he's only been in NFL one season as an assistant coach, new quarterback, new terminology. For a team like that, it's going to be the most difficult. And they need to get out on the field. It's like Wade Smith said, you get in Seth, nobody knows this better than you. You get in football shape by playing football, but you better be sure that you're in good enough physical condition when you come in, and you're not being in there with your teammates in off season does not cause you all of a sudden to start having nagging injuries to calves and groins and hamstrings and things like that. That's something I'm really interested in. Players are working out on their own. But without NFL supervision through the off season, how many injuries are going to be and how quick? I think it was Whitney Merciless told me he thought he could play a half, go all out in one half of a preseason game and be ready for the regular season as long as he had plenty of time to get ready, at practice, going through the routine that they do from the time they get there. And of course, for a rookie, it'd be a lot more difficult. So there's so many things that we want to see how they're handled. But Seth, let me ask you, you come in, everybody's supposed to work out. How much time do you need to play a preseason game? And can you get by with, say, two preseason games before regular season?
I think J.J. Watt and older players could come in and play a preseason game on day one. And then rookies, I think you need like a full, I think rookies need about 18 months. So there's somewhere in between those two is like, that's the problem, is that there's a whole continuum there of guys that have experience and know how to prepare themselves. It's possible to get yourself in football shape without actually practicing football, but you got to be really smart about how you do it. And frankly, most strength coaches even don't know how to do it. So I think to get the team ready, you need at least a couple weeks. But maybe it's sloppy, but I'm not – I think everything's so imperfect right now, John, that I don't worry too much about that. If they have to have a shorter preseason, then okay, then week one or two might be sloppier than usual. But the games are going to be played, right? It's not like in the third quarter – the two coaches are going to come to the middle of the field and say, you know what, this is just too sloppy. No football game today. We can't continue like this. So that's where I am with that. I don't care as much about the sloppiness. I would say this, John, because I know you're pessimistic that the players will get there by late June. This is what came up when Sean and I were talking about it. I think that if you have if you have mini camps in late June, potentially a full month or at least a few weeks before you'd report for training camp, you could treat it kind of like a dry run where, okay, we'll see. Like, how many cases did we get? Were we able to isolate those cases? And maybe give you a feel for what works, what doesn't work, or if it's possible at all. But you got to do that dry run if you want any kind of actual training camp.
I remember used to when I first started covering the NFL, there was no mini camps. They players would have off-season jobs, and then in June they would start to work out really seriously on their own in the Houston Heat and the Oilers case, and a lot of players lived here, and they did that. And they used to run the bayous, go down to the bottom, run up the top, up and down and up and down, and you'd see so many of them doing it. The leader was Earl Campbell. So he had players from all over the league who lived in this area who would do it. And training camp back then started in early July because they played six games. They had to have 8 weeks to prepare, and then they had a rookie mini camp. So they played themselves into shape. And so watching them do that back then, now they don't start off like they did then with double days on the first day and full contact and practices almost 3 hours a time because they can't do that legally. It's because of the CBA, but they did get ready. So I think, and guys probably, they've had their strength people and rehab people. Rehab people have always been able, if you're rehabbing, you've been able to go to the stadium. And so they've been on top of that. And so I'm really, really excited to see when they get back, whether it's June, July, to see how they'll be so fired up to be back. They'll be like kids on Christmas morning to get back there. And so I think because most of those guys are smart enough about to take care of themselves, they'll be able to spend about 2 weeks and then they're ready to go. And if they could have training camp at some point in August and get in a couple good weeks and at least two preseason games. And the key is everybody's in the same boat. That's the thing. As Bill O'Brien said, it's going to be a veteran year, and some teams have more seasoned vets than others, and maybe that helps from the mental standpoint. But they're going to play. I think they're going to play. They're going to find a way to play 16 games. They may not have fans, but they're going to play 16 games.
John McClain joining us for his weekly visit on a Wednesday in the 8 o'clock hour. J.J. Watt is meeting with the media today. You'll be able to hear that press conference at 12:30 here on Sports Radio 610. What are John McClain's first couple questions going to be to J.J. Watt? We'll hit that next. Wednesday, it's the 8 o'clock hour, so it is Payne. It is Pendergast. It is also John McClain, who's brought to you by HornSolutions.net. So, John, we are going to get a J.J. Watt media session today. It's going to run on our air here at 12:30 on Sports Radio 610. You're always batting leadoff on these things, John. So what are your first couple questions? What are the things you want to know about J.J. Watt right now?
Well, specifically, what I'm writing about for tomorrow is what I'm going to ask him about. And I'm going to ask him about Anthony Weaver because he's played for Anthony every year since Anthony's been the defensive line coach, and what he thinks about Anthony being the defensive coordinator and if he anticipates or would like for Anthony to use him differently than Romeo Crennel and Mike Vrabel did. And then Sunday, I'm writing a column about Charles Omenihu and how the expectations for him are different in his second season. And he told me yesterday he's reinvented himself to get more playing time and see what JJ thinks about Charles Omenihu going into his second year. And, of course, there's a lot of things we want to know about JJ's health, what he's doing. I'm sure he'll talk about that reality TV show he has. What's it called? Ultimate Tag.
Ultimate Tag. Did you watch it, John?
No, I don't watch reality TV.
It's not a reality. It's a sports competition. These are professional tag players running around.
Yeah, no. And so I'm curious, you know, what he thinks about when they play Pittsburgh. Last time they went to Pittsburgh, he was injured. Now they've got his brothers, TJ and Derek, and that'll be fun that week. The Watt brothers will be front and center before that game. So JJ's always entertaining. You know, he's a good talker. He's smart, and he knows how to handle the media, and he speaks to the public through the media. So I'm eager to see it, to have him on that Zoom call.
John, between the Zoom calls with players, and then I guess just you've been from a time where I know you weren't using manual typewriters back in your day, but you're pretty damn close to it. How are you adjusting to this new Zoom world and doing your job?
I used manual typewriters my first 5 years in the sports writing business, starting in 1973, and then
it was an electric typewriter.
No, manual typewriters. I never used an electric typewriter.
Manual? And,
like ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk with the letters sort of?
Oh, it was loud. You went into a newsroom when I came to the Chronicle from the Waco Tribune Herald, where I'd worked 3.5 years while I was in Baylor, and it was so loud in a newsroom with everybody banging away on their typewriters. And then we went to these computers, which now I can't imagine using the things we used to use, but all of a sudden it got quiet like a funeral home, and you were afraid to talk because your voice would go all across the newsroom. So, yeah, I still got the typewriter I used to use.
And you don't plug it in?
No, you just type on it.
Wow. I didn't realize. I thought in the 1970s that you'd be using electric typewriters at least. So you'd
Nobody that I knew ever used an electric typewriter. They had them. And I never used one because I could bang away on those old ones. People used to tell me, man, you type loud. I said, well, you have to hit the keys so hard. You have to go through a carbon, and then you have to hit the sheet of paper plus to go through the carbon to your copy. So it was a whole lot different than it is now.
But you didn't have to slum it around at all. You went straight from a manual typewriter to a computer. You didn't have to go through the word processor purgatory Sean and I did?
No. Okay. Nope.
All right. The word processor was fun.
The Chronicle. And I think the thing that we used first, I had to take it all over Canada and the U.S. covering the original eras, was called a Silent 700 from Texas Instruments. And it was one of the hardest things I've ever seen to use. And thank God they got rid of those quick and as everything started to modernize.
Yeah, and it's so loud. Like, how do you go to illicit websites on that thing if it's clickety clacking all the time?
Well, they didn't have any websites back then, but I would have found a way.
You could. You know what you did back then was you typed out "boob" on your calculator.
What was boob? 8008.
It was 8008 or 6006.
Yeah, that's good stuff. John McClain joining us for his weekly visit. John, do you sense anything the Texans might be doing with J.J.'s contract this offseason?
Well, I thought that they would redo it and take, not give him more money, but to free up some salary cap room, which they don't need right now. But if they do, I could see they did that with him once before, took some of his money, made it into a signing bonus, and then so he got money up front to lower his cap figure, which is what a lot of players do. So I still wouldn't be surprised if they do that at some point when they need the money.
You know, John, when we went on the air this morning at 6 a.m., Sean tried a dirty trick, which was he flew this out. You did, Sean, you did. Yeah, maybe you don't even remember doing it. He came on, the first words he said this morning were, "Hey, JJ's at the podium today. You never know. At this age, he might be announcing a retirement."
That's not what I said.
That's pretty much what you said.
You're taking great liberties with paraphrasing.
You said close to something like that.
one of the things about J.J. having his back surgeries and in his broken leg, yeah, he was recovering from surgery, but he didn't take the beating that he would have taken if he'd have been playing all that time from double teams and triple teams. Sometime I'll see his body after a game, and parts of him are just black and blue and purple. And so, yes, he was rehabbing, but, you know, he turned 31 in March. You know, the Texans love for him to do like Calais Campbell. Isn't Calais Campbell like going to be 35 this year?
Yeah.
And he's still in demand and still playing well. And it, nothing would surprise me about White playing that long.
John, here's what I said at the beginning of the show, and I'm curious if you feel the same way. When we get the email, you get the same email Seth and I do from Texans PR, that all of a sudden in the middle of the day on a Wednesday, there's a press conference with J.J. Watt on May, whatever it is, that at the age that he's at right now with all the injuries, I just said I felt like there's a 10 to 15% chance that we could be getting a big announcement that maybe Ultimate Tag is what he's deciding to devote the rest of his life to, that he's walked. Do you get that feeling, John, like at this stage, like that there's a – even as much as J.J. loves football and as much as Houston loves J.J. and as much money as he's making, that there's a small percentage chance that, I mean, we're seeing more and more guys retire at a younger age.
Absolutely not, because I knew this was coming last week.
Oh, okay, well, look at you.
Maybe he knew he was retiring last week.
I've been requesting him and Watson every week to get them on there because we hadn't talked to either one since right after the Kansas City playoff loss, but I'm pretty sure Watt's more fired up than he usually is, like all players, because they're ready to get out on the field and be together instead of cooped up the way they are.
And that's the other 85 to 90%. I agree with you. Like, I was just in a little sliver right there. Once he turns,
I feel like, what would be the most unlikely J.J. Watt retirement? Like, if he retired to open up a small ice cream shop in Midtown or something, where you could just, like, on any day of the week, you could walk in and JJ's there with, like, a paper hat on, scooping out pecan ice cream or something.
Most unlikely? Strip club, for sure.
Something like that would be like Camden Yards in Baltimore, where Boog's Barbecue with Boog Powell, one of their all-time great players. People think it's just got his name on it, but Boog is right there.
8008.
Boog Powell is right there at the entrance and signing autographs and greeting everybody. So JJ be right there at his ice cream parlor, wearing a little white apron and a little white hat, greeting everybody.
Yeah, JJ smart enough to not get into the restaurant. You know,
it'd be packed too.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. I wonder if it would probably get a poor Yelp review because of the lines. It would be one of those things where, like, nobody goes there. It's too busy. Yeah.
He'd import the milk from Wisconsin and everything.
Yeah. He'd make a big Wisconsin thing out of it. Yeah. It'd be like JJ Moose or something like that.
Right.
99 flavors. He'd just rip off of something like that.
Look at you. 99 flavors. Like a marketing genius. All right.
I got 99 flavors and the bitch ain't one. Yeah. Something like
that. Not on brand. John McClain is with us for his weekly visit. John's got a great piece up on the Chronicle about the Rooney Rule and minority hiring in the NFL, with an idea that is just an idea that comes from John's experience of just covering the league for 4 decades. We will dive into that with John McClain next. So minority hiring in the NFL has been a big topic the last couple weeks, with some changes to the Rooney Rule, some proposed changes to the Rooney Rule that have been tabled. And John, you've got a piece up in the Chronicle right now, which this is where your experience really, really shines, is in stuff like this, John, where you talk about a different time and place in the NFL back when you were first covering the league that allowed minority coaches to get much more exposure than they do now. I'll let you lay it out for the audience.
First of all, I'm not complaining because I know times change. I'm just saying that it's another reason I think that should be discussed. And because the times have changed and the media can't spend more than there's mandatory interviews where there's, as of last year, coaches are supposed to be made available when you request them. And then before that, you got to talk to assistant coaches in camp once in off season and during the bye week. And then there was a long period where You didn't, they didn't have to let you talk to them at all. When Bill Parcells, I believe, and he and Belichick in 91 are the first ones I can remember who put a lot of restrictions on the media. Before media could watch practice, we were trusted not to reveal anything about trick plays, and we could talk to assistant coaches whenever we wanted. And I talked about during the time I was covering the NFL for 8 years between the Oilers leaving and when I stepped in on the Texans in there in 2005, I spent a lot of time traveling around the NFL, and I could go in a lot of coaches' offices, and I used Lovie Smith as an example when Lovie was defensive coordinator at St. Louis. Mike Martz was the head coach, and he let his assistant coaches talk to us. I used to spend time at Tony Dungy's office, and I did it with a lot of coaches, including minorities. So you'd quote the coaches on a lot of subjects. You could talk to them off the record. You could get to know them here with the Oilers. I could do that. You know, with Gary Kubiak and Dom Capers, we could do that. And so we wrote about them a lot, about the coaches. I remember people telling me, media people, about this Tony Dungy, assistant coach, had everything it took to be a head coach. So I started writing about him, and we just got to know them on a personal basis. And the more you get to know somebody, the more you write about them, talk about them. You know, I could come on my talk show back then on KTRH and say, hey, I was talking to Kenny Houston today, watching film in his office, and pointed out today, last time I was in an assistant coach's office, I figured when I wrote this, was Wade Phillips in 2011, right after he got hired. And I've been in, you just don't get to talk to them. You know, when you come out and you spend 10 minutes in front of the media, everybody's asking them questions, but nothing about the personal. So my point was, and I talked to some other longtime writers about this, like Peter King at NBC and Bob Glauber at Newsday, and because we all used to get to do that, and you don't, so they get a lot less attention. Used to, you want to know about any assistant coach, you call the media relations director, and he can send you 20 clips where a certain coach has been interviewed, and you get to know about him and all that. But I thought that could just be one reason fewer minorities are getting interviews.
Yeah, and it's I see, Sean, I can appreciate why coaches are paranoid about it. And I think what the coaches that are paranoid about it, that don't want their assistants talking to the media, is that you just got to hire better. Like, you got to hire guys that you trust. Like, Greg Williams notoriously just loved talking to reporters and whatnot, to the point where, and I think it was Sean Payton that caught him tipping picks one year during the draft. Greg Williams was sitting there and tipping picks as soon as they go out, and they figured out that it was him. I think that's what they're paranoid about more than anything. But back in the day, like Belichick, all those guys, they formed relationships with members of the New York media. That's kind of how they got their name out there. But then as soon as they got their actual jobs, they put the clamps down on it.
I asked Herm Edwards when he was head coach of the Jets if the way he was able to interact with the media, did he think that helped him get recognition that led to that coaching job? He said, absolutely. And Lovie Smith said that. Marty Schottenheimer, and I wrote a story about Marty. Marty's one of my all-time favorite coaches, but when he was head coach of San Diego, he shut it down. He couldn't talk to Wade Phillips, who was his defensive coordinator. And one time at a league meeting, I was president of the Pro Football Writers of America, and I spent a lot of time trying to get head coaches to let us talk to assistant coaches more. And not everybody shut it down. You know, some of them still let you do it. But I followed Marty to his room at a league meeting. And I talked to him. I said, Marty, when you were assistant coach, didn't you get to talk to the media a lot? I used to see you quoted all the time. He said, yeah, I did. I said, do you think that helped you get head coaching job? He goes, you know what? Yeah, I did. I said, well, why won't you let your assistants talk? And he said, well, I'm told there's this thing called email. And if one of my coaches says something dumb, it goes all over the country immediately. I said, well, then don't hire coaches who say dumb stuff to the media. And he just laughed and he didn't budge on it. And so I don't know if that's got anything to do it, but I threw it out there. And I'll tell you this, I know less about assistant coaches now than I did ever. When I when I covered the Oilers, when I could go sit in an office, and this was not just assistant coaches. You could go in the general manager's office, head coach's office, personnel director, sit down and watch tape with them, and they weren't in a hurry to get rid of you. And if they couldn't do it, they'd tell you, no, I don't have time. We'll do it another time. But, and I miss that personal one-on-one relationships you build with people.
Yeah, is that the biggest change for you, John, over the 40 years you've been doing this in terms of the ability to do your job to the best of your ability? Is access the biggest thing that's changed?
Other than the manual typewriter?
Yes. Right, other than what you're typing on.
Yeah, but most people are under the same conditions. Like I needed TJ Yates for a column I did 2 weeks ago. So I talked to TJ. We got to BS for a while on the phone, and I thought, boy, this is nice. I'd love to be able to. I didn't tell him this because I know it's not going to happen. I like to come in and sit down in the office sometimes. So, yeah, I miss the one-on-one interaction. I used to could go into the office of a head coach and talk to him, and if they didn't have time, they'd tell you. It's not like they would let you. We used to be able to spend a whole lot more time talking to players, too, where you get to know them better, talk about their alma maters, their friends, their families. We used to do stories where you'd go to a player's house, send a photographer, and you'd sit down at home with Seth Payne, and you'd talk to the family and show and shoot pictures and everything. And I miss doing those kind of things, but it's the way the times are now. You roll with the punches or you get out of the ring.
I did a sit-down interview with a Bel Air Buzz when I was first in town in 2002.
Is it a hatchet job?
They said, no, it was a nice little, it was a little puff piece. My picture is still up in the Jack's Barbecue over there because I used to live right, or not, the Jack's Grill. They're on, what's that, on Bissonnette or Bel Air, wherever it is. And, cause I used to live right down the street from there. But the young lady that came out, she was a young reporter. She came out and I swear she sat in my house. It felt for like 4 hours doing this little pithy puff piece interview. And then I never did another in-home interview after that.
She ruined it for everybody.
Yeah.
I would love to know more about Anthony Weaver. I'd like to know a lot more about Anthony. You got to interview him a lot when he was a player here playing for Gary Kubiak. And I think Anthony, based on everything I've heard, Anthony has what it takes to be a head coach. This is going to be his next step in his evolution of a bit trying to be a head coach as the coordinator. But we'll be able to talk to him every week, but it's all business. You know, it's no, you know, how's the family, things like that, because of time restraints. And that's the way it is with most teams today. And for those organizations that don't do it like that, I applaud it. And the Texans media relations staff does a great job of getting everybody that they can possibly get for us. But just, you know, the times have changed.
Yeah. This I can tell you about Anthony Weaver, John. Highly educated. That's what I can vouch for that. Question for the general. This is from Chris in Atlanta. He listens on the radio.com app. If there is a limited preseason with practices and the season does start somewhat on time, I feel it could potentially add a little more parity to the league, meaning lack of preparation and cohesiveness as the focus is to try to navigate through the process of keeping players safe and on site. Do you see that as a possibility? John, do you see that the pandemic that we're living in right now creating more parity, at least early on in the season?
Maybe early on as teams are adjusting to come back. You know, they always say it's not what you do in September and October, but November and December. I would suspect the talented teams like Kansas City and Baltimore, who the Texans get right out of the gate, they're still going to be the best teams. Baltimore's schedule, my God, it's the easiest in the league, and they travel the least. I think the only time they're out of the Eastern time zone is when they come here in a second game. And so Baltimore should have the best record in the AFC again. But it's still going to come down to talent, coaching, and injuries.
John McClain joining us for his weekly visit. John, what do you think of this, just shifting gears for a minute, what do you think of the standoff going on in baseball right now?
The union and the agents, like Scott Burris, they run baseball. And that's not the way it is in football, of course. But I understand they don't want to roll back. They don't want to share 50-50 in the income this year because they're not going to get to share 50-50 next year or the year after that. I do believe they'll get it worked out. And I can't wait to see the NBA and Major League Baseball come back to see how they pull this off because the NFL is going to be watching closely. But I think at some point common sense will prevail and people will be so happy to have it back, to have baseball back. They don't care about any of these things.
John, how is your how's your personal life going with all these restrictions and whatnot? Are you and the wife reconnecting, or have you started to give each other the stiff arm as you walk by in the hallway?
We spend a lot of time together, and as I mentioned earlier, we do. You know, I don't have to fight the Galleria traffic. A couple of times I've driven it just to see if it's what it's like now, and gradually there's more and more. But you know, I do miss coming over to the station and being there, and I also miss going over to the Texans. We don't go every week like we do, but because of the all-season program that would be going on right now, we'd be going over once or twice a week, and I can't wait till they get back, especially see how the Texans are going to handle themselves and to see how they're going to handle the media.
Hey, John, one thing I've noticed over the last few months is, like, I feel like it's been a slow rollout of the Jack Easterby experience, to where Jack Easterby, you know, obviously wasn't named the general manager because Bill O'Brien was named the general manager, but his name gets brought up more and more by Bill O'Brien, and through the draft process, I thought that was probably, we heard more about Jack Easterby than we ever had before. If things go well this year, do you expect Jack Easterby to be named the general manager next year?
Not as long as Bill O'Brien's there. No, Bill's a general manager. Jack's his right-hand man. O'Brien's like most head coaches that have this power. They're over personnel. And then all the other things a normal general manager does, Jack Easterby handles that. Easterby's involved in everything over there. If you talk to people behind the scenes, he's involved in everything that goes on. And this year he's got more influence than he had last year. Last year was his first season there, and they were feeling him out and feeling like, what does he do well? What does he want to do? And he was adjusting to them as well. But at some point, I'm hoping we'll be able to get Easterby on one of our Zoom calls.
I think he's the general manager already, and they just didn't want to call him that. Like, O'Brien's got the power and the final say in everything. I feel like in there are other organizations where the general manager is in a similar state, except the Texans knew there's no way in hell we could name this guy who was a pastor 5 years ago as general manager of an NFL team. Am I way out of line in thinking that?
Yeah. Bill, the general manager, as we think, is over multiple departments. O'Brien doesn't have time being over multiple departments, so Easterby does everything, and he's involved in personnel with O'Brien.
But you're saying that Easterby is doing the stuff that most general managers do.
Other than personnel, which is the most important. So okay. Bill can tell Easterby what to do. Easterby can't tell Bill O'Brien what to do.
John, you're plugged in around the league. Are the Rams getting any degree of criticism over not locking up Jalen Ramsey to the point that the Texans were about not locking up Laremy Tunsil when they made the trade?
A little bit, but nothing like Tunsil. The Rams have kind of been out of sight and out of mind, which is very strange when you think they are the Rams. Most of the stuff you hear about the Rams is coming from about the stadium and how much the cost overruns have been. Now it's like going on $5 billion, and they've had to get another $500 million loan from the league, and Stan Kroenke, the owner, will be dead way before that loan is due. Tell you guys an interesting thing while we're talking about Los Angeles. This came over earlier from Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel, and this week they talked to a government watchdog who's monitoring the nation's Paycheck Protection Program, in which businesses get money from the government. And they checked with every team in the four major sports. No NFL team, no NBA team, but the Lakers. And the Lakers, of course, got so much bad publicity, they turned it back in. But of all the 53 baseball and NHL teams they surveyed, 27 declined to answer the question, and they're not required to. So they're wondering, are these teams getting government relief like the Lakers did? So the only way you know, unless they tell you, is you don't. I think that'd be very interesting if teams owned by billionaires are getting government relief.
Tillman Fertitta said that he got it, but he sent the money back. He said that the sit-down that he and other restaurant people had with President Trump last week, Tillman said he got that, but he sent the money back.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. I can't imagine. I know a lot of owners have other businesses and they're taking a financial bath like Fertitta is, but still, you know, there's so many other businesses that need it more than sports owners.
Yeah, no doubt about that. John, what's going on in the Chronicle this weekend?
Well, J.J. Watt, we've got doing Watt for tomorrow. Brian T. Smith's doing a Watt column. And Sunday, I'm doing a thing on Charles Amenihu, as I mentioned earlier. No shortage of ideas. And I appreciate you guys letting me talk about my column today and the minority hiring program in the NFL. And you guys stay safe. And I hope you have a great rest of the week.
John, before we let you go, I meant to follow up when you mentioned this earlier. I'm glad you mentioned Amenihu again. You said that he kind of reinvented himself. Are we going to get like a James Harden weight loss type scenario here, or has he just been perfecting his technique and whatnot?
No, his is mental and physical, and I think Charles said he's actually gained some weight as he's reshaped his body working out and added more muscle. So his is a little bit different than Harden.
Okay.
There you go.
I'm excited to see the new and improved Charles Amenihu.
Absolutely. John, we appreciate it as always. Thank you.
Thank you guys very much.
All right. There's John McClain. He's brought to you by hornsolutions.net each and every week. A lot of topics kicking around there with McClain. We got in some typewriter talk and word processor talk.
I fully expect him to shoot down my theory about Jack Easterby, but I wanted to get it on the record. On this, the 27th day of June, our Lord's year, 2020.
May.
Yeah, close enough.
It's all the same.
If we're going to get nitpicky about things.
It's true.
I have this gnawing suspicion that if things go well this year, Jack Easterby will be the general manager next year.
What would be the purpose of giving him the you're saying in addition to the EVP title, the EVP of football development or football operations? Is a pretty
EVP
nice
ain't crap. You give me GM. That's what people.
You know what it stands for?
It's a currency we understand and know. Look, a vice president, I could turn around and hit three vice presidents with my elbow.
That's true.
I don't know what your organizational structure is. You know, oh, you're an executive vice president. That's great. Does that mean that you just graduated high school? Like any company can say anything about that. If you're the general manager, that's something you put it on your resume. There's a cachet to that.
You're basically saying that NFL teams are like banks. Everybody's got a VP title. Is what you
but there's no way. Like Cal McNair knows he can't take this guy that was the team preacher for the Chiefs, 7 years ago,
right.
And now all of a sudden he's a general manager. He was a character coach in New England. Now he's your general manager a year later.
Yeah.
So I think that if it works out well, I look at it and I see the relationship and that they're operating the way. They're operating the way a more established NFL head coach, like one that has won Super Bowls or whatnot, would operate alongside his general manager, where sometimes the football coach does have more power than the general manager. And it feels like a GM head coach relationship, just where Bill O'Brien has the actual title. And I don't know if they would bother changing it, and it probably just comes down to whether Jack Easterby wants it on his resume or not. And a lot of that is like Easterby has put himself in a pretty nice spot where if things don't go well, it's all on Bill O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
If things do go well, hey, look at our unique organizational structure.
Yeah.
We had the guts, which is true, right?
Yep,
like
yep.
If it works out, they had the guts to try something. I'll give them full credit. If it works out, they had the guts to try something that very few organizations would have tried out.
Yeah.
If it fails, then it's like, what are you doing, you morons?
Right.
That's why nobody tries it this way. If it works out, they're geniuses.
No,
and then Jack Easterby. So Jack Easterby won't get hardly any of the blame if it fails. But if it works out, he'll be general manager, Lord Protector, and Chancellor of Harris County. He'll probably take my job of COVID commissioner.
Right.
And he'll probably, we'll have to pay him a tithe.
A job that everybody wants, a tithe. It's exactly right. The NBA, I am sold on one particular way to do the postseason in the NBA. And if they do it this way, what's the ideal scenario for the Rockets? We'll hit that next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.